You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You just found the very best in original talk radio broadcasting on the internet. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want. You're listening to On the Couch, On the Couch with Dr. Michelle on LA Talk Radio.
Yes, this is your friendly psychologist, Dr. Michelle, on the radio. And welcome to my couch. You're always welcome anytime, especially this time. And, as usual, I've got a great show for you today. I'm happy to be answering many questions from a lot of my listeners who have emailed me about their problems. We're also talking about, as usual, relationship issues. Things people do to ruin their relationships. And I also have a poll to read to you. It's from Oakland University. A bunch of students took it. It's kind of a heads up about what people are thinking. What's important to them in a relationship? You'll be really interested in learning the differences between what men and women say. Maybe you won't. I don't know. Also coming up, I have a test. Another on-the-air test. It's about your personality. You can learn something more about yourself and also your friends and family. So we'll be doing that at the end of the show, probably, because I do have a lot of questions that I have to get to. But first, I usually like to go through the Metro News Service Health Wire. The mental health stories, those are always fun. And most of the time, they are boring research studies. But I found a good one. and this is what I call sex in the news. Yeah, this is really cool. It says here from the Metro Newswire, dated the beginning of this week, actually. It says, it doesn't look like the tough economy is causing Americans to cut back on physical intimacy. Nearly 4 out of 5 respondents in a Consumer Reports research poll say financial problems have not affected their sex lives. Yeah, 79% noted they haven't changed how frequently they're intimate with their partner. That's almost 80%. You know, you'd think people would be depressed and feeling kind of funky and like, oh, I'm just really depressed. I don't feel like being intimate. I need to think about my problems and the economy. And let's watch the bad, sad news and get depressed together. But anyway, more than 80% admit that in the past year they've skipped opportunities to have sex. Opportunities. Skipped. Why have they skipped? Well, insomnia and illness, which are both stress-related, were two top reasons given. Insomnia and stress. We can all relate. This next study that I pulled out, sex studies jump out at me from the page. Don't count on sex if your mate would rather count sheep. Lack of sleep is the number one reason people say, I'm not tonight. I get a headache. Please, I'm really tired. In a Consumer Reports health survey on the top 6 reasons for not having sex, 53% said being too tired or needing sleep was the reason to nod off instead of taking it off. Kind of like that. A sex therapist quoted in the survey noted that often a person's claim of being too tired used to mean that they simply weren't interested in sex. Remember that old story? The old thing about I got a headache? Usually it came from women in the olden days, they said. I got a headache. I'm too tired. 49% said not feeling well or having a health problem were reasons for passing on sex. Another 40% were just not in a mood. I'm not in a mood. I'd rather play a video game. The next 3 excuses were childcare obligations, work, and watching a TV program or movie. Those things are more important, I say. well, childcare obligations are, and work, yeah. I think I'd rather have sex than watch a TV program or a movie. Wouldn't you? No? The survey was conducted with 1,000 sexually active adults. So that's the dealio going on. 53% in the huge poll of 1,000 sexually active adults say the number one reason is because they're tired. They're dead tired. And you know, a lot of people are working two jobs in this economy or 12 hours in order to make ends meet. And rightly so. And you know what? You do need your sleep. Because if you're fatigued and you're not into it, you're really out of it, guys and ladies, you're going to be faking it. You don't want to fake it. You want to enjoy it. You want to be there. You want to be present. You don't want to just be laying there going, okay, let's get it over with. That's really sexy and fun. Not. So there you go. Sex studies. Love to read those things because they're always good. All right, let's take some questions I received off the internet on my website, docmichelle@aol.com, docmichelle@aol.com. Write me if you have questions about relationship problems or any general issues I can try to help you with. I do want to establish that you and I do not have a therapeutic relationship. This is just advice, just suggestions, and hopefully entertainment as well. All right, so let me go to the first question. Dear Dr. Michelle, my husband and I have been married a year and we used to have sex. Oh, it's sex again! At least 2 to 3 times a day. Then I got pregnant and really didn't want it as much. Then after I had the baby, I really wanted it again, and he didn't. Now it's like pulling teeth to get it. We sometimes have it once a night, and he's not passionate like he used to be. Did I do this to him by not wanting sex as much when I was pregnant? Or do you think he's cheating? I just want to go back to the way it was. Please help! This is from Laura. And I have no idea if he's cheating. But you know, when you do have a child, sex does slow down. Now, all the pop sex authors say it's not supposed to. Come on, you've got to get back into your healthy sex life. Come on, give me a break. You know, ladies, if you've had kids, you've been carrying around this 8 or so pound watermelon in your body and you feel like a whale and you don't feel sexy. So then you have the baby and you still have a belly. And you've gained weight, usually. And you don't feel sexy. And you're not in the mood, and you're tired, and you're lactating. And I'm depressed just talking about it. but anyway, the fact that he may not be having sex with you is maybe you should talk to him and ask him why. Communication. What a concept. Because maybe he's feeling that you're tired. Maybe he's feeling that you're preoccupied with the baby. Maybe he's figured that you need a little downtime to take care of the baby. And some guys just don't want to rock the boat for a little while. You know what we do as women is we jump to the negative. We go to, oh, I'm not sexy enough, or oh, I'm too fat, or oh, I'm not this, or I'm not good enough, or whatever like that. But you know, sometimes there are other reasons why the sex thing isn't going on. There's so many that could be possible here. So many times sometimes guys are turned off, you know, because but they've been observing us for a while, feeling and looking like a whale and trying to have a baby, and you're not in the greatest mood. They don't quite know when to jump back in, if you pardon the expression. So you should open up your communication to him, Laura, and find out, darling, what can I do for you that would make our sex life good again? Because I really would like it. What can I do to make you feel good? Are you afraid you're going to hurt me? Are you afraid, am I not attractive enough to you? Open up and ask him. Okay? And right here in your letter, you say it's like pulling teeth to get sex from him. Tell him that. It's like pulling teeth, I feel like, to get sex from you. What's going on? Tell me what's going on. And if he says nothing, don't bust him and yell at him and just say, really, I'm okay about it. Look, I've been feeling like a whale for the last 4 months. I don't feel attractive. Tell me what's going on. I'm a big girl. I'm okay about it. Just let's talk about it because I love you and I want to be close to you again. Because that's really important. So go ahead and ask him and see what he says. And then write back to me and tell me what he says. And then we can maybe chat with him if you're not getting enough information. But do try things too. Ask him what you can do to look good for him. What would he like you to dress up in? What would he like you to do to look sexier for him? That's okay. That's cool. Go for it. Just be honest, open, communicate. I wouldn't assume things and say to him like, you don't think I'm pretty anymore. No, don't do that. Just say, I love you. I want to be close to you. But sometimes I feel like I'm pulling teeth here when I want to have sex. I'm really attracted to you. And now that I have this baby out of my body and I'm trying to get back on track, I really want to be close to you. What can we do? Okay, maybe he just needs a little time. And that's okay. Don't be impatient. Just open up and see what he has to say. How's that? All right. Let's see. Who else do we have here? Let me pick the coolest questions that I really liked. Okay, here we go. Dear Dr. Michelle, I am 39, single, and in the... I am 39, single, and in the middle of a very strange relationship with a 53-year-old guy who is divorced and living with his mother. Uh-oh. We've been seeing each other occasionally for the past 4 months, and although he keeps saying that he finds me attractive and interesting, he avoids any form of intimacy apart from long goodbye kisses. Every time I offer him to spend the night at my place, he leaves. He has introduced me to most of his friends and takes me to their parties, but he rarely calls, and we might go weeks without seeing each other unless I call him. I feel uncomfortable having to chase or seduce a man. Am I being pathetically naive and reading more in this relationship than there is to it? Yeah. In one word, yes. Yes, you are. You're being pathetically naive and you're reading more into this relationship. Thank you. All right, next letter. No, I'm just being cruel here. Okay, let me tell you what's going on here, Katie. It's Katie, by the way. First of all, you got a 53-year-old man living with mommy. Okay. Now, 4 months into any relationship, especially for a recently divorced guy, it's really kind of early in the game. Now, maybe he has feelings for you, but he's kind of cautious because he doesn't want to make another mistake. And it's possible that staying the night at your place would require explanations to mom that make the relationship seem more serious now than it is. Now, most 53-year-old men do not live with their mommy unless they are divorced and or widowed or whatever. And they're taking care of someone who is handicapped or their mom has dementia and they don't have a place to live. That I understand. You didn't specify if this is the real deal going on here. But most guys don't live with their mom when they're 53 years old. If it's a problem that he's going to have to tell his mommy why he didn't come home, just run 180 degrees the other way, Katie. Go. Just don't even think. I don't care how good looking this guy is or how mature he seems. Go the other way. If he was married a long time, 4 months may be too soon. I would not invite him to spend the night at your place. I would get to know this person more often. I would also kind of check and talk. You said you go to parties and meet his friends and things like that. Find out more about these people, what they're like, you know, who they are. Get a little more information about him. Start asking questions, not like a drill sergeant, you know. You need to tell me what... No. find out more about maybe his relationship. What happened? What kind of traits does he like in a person? Find out more information from him. Okay? What really is weird to me right now, and maybe I just am you know, not getting enough information here, because it is just an email, and I didn't get all the details, but the lack of information that you're getting from him is weird. When Mr. Sometime calls again, you know, you could be open to seeing him. And ask questions, like I said. You know? So just kind of take your time. I would be seeing other people, though. You're young. Come on. You're single. You don't sound like you're desperate. Maybe you are. Take a look at yourself if you think you're desperate. But anyway, I would start seeing other people, too. 4 months, yeah, you may still be getting over the relationship. If it was a long one, even. Guys need a little time. This living with mommy thing, though, I know the economy's tough. And we all are having, many of us are having financial issues. We have to pull it together. We have to work harder. We have to look for more opportunities. But I don't know. 53-year-old guy living with mommy still. Honestly, if it were me, I'd be gone. But if he's that intriguing and you still have hope and are holding out because you think this guy's wonderful, then just continue to see him. But leave your options open. Okay? Yeah, alrighty, here we go. Dear Dr. Michelle. And by the way, if you have any more questions, feel free to write me back. All right, Katie? Or any Laura or anybody else who would like to write. It's docmichelle@aol.com. By the way, my website is right there for you to talk to me as well. DrMichelleTherapy.com. DrMichelle with two L's, therapy.com. That's the one there that says, positive life changes, doll. It's all about detoxing from the drama in your life, taking responsibility, and making good choices. That's what I'm about. Check it out. All right, here we go. Next letter. Dear Dr. Michelle, after his affair, I'm a victim of my husband's midlife crisis. Oh, we were married for 28 years, and we have 4 adult children now. I am 44 and was shocked to find my husband's having an affair with a worker 25 years his junior. I can't trust him, although he is affectionate and says he doesn't want to lose me. Oh, God. I want to leave him, but don't have the courage to go. I don't have any friends. I devoted most of my life to him and my children. I've been seeing a psychiatrist for the past year, but I'm so angry I can't accept what he's done to me. I'm so confused that it's destroying me inside. I do need my space, but I don't know how to go about getting it. Okay, I don't know the real details of what's happening with your living arrangement. Sounds to me like you're still in the house, and he's still there too. And he had an affair, and he feels guilty, and you feel like you can't trust him, and he doesn't want to lose you. Is he still having the affair? Excuse me, I'd kick him out. I'm sorry. I mean, I know guys go through midlife crisis and all that stuff. I get that. And I get that there may be problems with your marriage. It's been a long time you guys have been together, and you go through, you had 4 children, you have a lot of stressors and issues and all that, and good communication and trust and love and great sex and all those things make for a relationship. Sometimes we don't have all those things. But I don't know. Are you depressed? Are you going to a psychiatrist and getting medication, I would assume? Most people go to a psychiatrist to get medication and also to talk to. There's a lot of psychiatrists who are wonderful who do therapy as well, rather than go to a psychologist. But anyway, I hope that, you know, the psychiatrist is giving you support and maybe helping you out with medication. And but if I were you, I would get some space from the situation, because you need to think out how you do feel. You need to think out your future. I mean, how can you live for the rest of your life with this person? He's begging you to come back, and you're always not trusting him. You know, that's the deal breaker for most people. You know, you really have to really think about the future. How are you going to trust this guy in the future? What's he going to have to do? What's he going to have to produce? How's he going to have to... You're always going to be thinking, I wonder if he's with a 25-year-old. Or I wonder if he's with somebody else. You know, that's... I think that you should get your space. I think you should talk about the possibility of family or friends with whom you can move in if he's not going to split. If you can't get him out of there, you need to move you and get some space. Get yourself an apartment. I don't know if you're working or whatever. But get your space. For him to come home every night after you found out he's with a 25-year-old and you're hurt and upset, and it just gets worse and worse and worse, and he's begging back like a puppy. That's good and all that, but you have to resolve those trust issues and work those out. I would suggest, if he really wants to get help with working the relationship out, that you both go to a couples therapist. In your area, I see that you're not in our state. So in your area, what I would do is suggest that you ask your psychiatrist for a referral to a really good couples therapist. And that person can maybe help you with your differences, help you understand why your husband started fooling around with a 25-year-old, whatever that reason was. I'm not justifying it. But then you can start from ground zero and work up into trust again. So that's just an idea. Okay? I think that's a good idea. All right. What else? Let's see. Let me look at another one. What other questions? Aha! Dear Dr. Michelle, I've been dumped by three women. Oh. I'm a 28-year-old, pretty nice guy, but I don't know if it's me or them. People say I'm pretty good looking. I communicate pretty well, but I don't get it. What am I doing wrong? Well, I don't know. I don't know much about you, but, you know, there's a whole bunch of things that people do to kind of mess up their relationships. You know, I don't know what they were looking for if they were not your type. You have to pinpoint exactly the kind of person or the qualities you'd like in someone. And if that person doesn't have those qualities, then it's probably not going to work anyway. But it's really important to communicate well. Communicate well. Be attentive. Showing affection. Keep connected by your body language. Look at that person openly. Actually, listen. That's probably one of the biggest things I suggest for guys to make relationships work. Listen! Listen! All right? Being dishonest is a big deal breaker, like I said to Katie there. It's hard to trust somebody who, you know, has betrayed you or misled you. I don't know if you withhold your feelings or if you're kind of secretive or coming off. You say you're a nice guy and you say you're pretty good looking, but that's not telling me that you're open and communicative or warm or, you know what I'm saying? Sometimes like stonewalling someone, you know, you're walled off. That's no fun to be with someone who's walled off. You can be nice, like I said, and you can be nice looking and all that, but you have to be a little open and share. All right? And listen. That helps a lot, too. So I don't know the things you've done. You haven't really told me. And many times when people come in to see me or they write me, they appear really like they're the victims. A lot of times people don't kind of come off taking responses. It's very rare that someone will come in to see me off the bat and say, I screwed up, I did this, I did that, I'm a jerk. It's usually they did this to me. They hurt me. And that, you know, that's valid, that's cool and all that. But taking responsibility and taking a look at your actions might be a really good idea to what you might be doing that's pushing these ladies away. Do you really want a committed relationship? Ask yourself that. All right? Ask yourself this, Chad. This is Chad, by the way. Do you really want a committed relationship? Maybe, if you're really honest with yourself, some guys just want to, you know, play the field, goof around. You know, hook up. That's okay. Just be honest with yourself. But if you're really truly looking for a committed relationship, then ask yourself, what are some of the things you can do to improve yourself in terms of being emotionally available? Emotionally available. Don't be overly critical. Are you overly critical? Do you argue? Are you defensive? Do you let other stuff affect you? Like I said, do you close up? Do you put a wall between you? Do you take responsibility for your behaviors? Are you self-righteous sometimes? So these are just some things that people do. You know, just be honest. Okay? So, because if you're walled off or closed and not listening and not making yourself, and I'm not talking about a wuss. I'm going to be a girly man if I do that. I'm going to be too sensitive and then they won't like me because I need to be a bad boy. No, you don't. You can be a man and be open and listen and have communication skills and all that stuff. That's really true. You can be all that. Because men are all that now. They've been forced to be in all that. Aren't they? I think so. All right, let's go to my poll. I have this study that I wanted to share with you. We'll come back to more questions. I've got a couple of good ones I just viewed. But let's come back to that. I just wanted to share this men versus women poll. What's important in a relationship? The opposite sex. The age-old question that enters into the mind when thinking of the opposite sex is, what are they looking for? Of course, guys and ladies have different perceptions of what are important traits in a significant other. But here are the results of a poll. Men and women at Oakland University. Apparently, this is a huge poll. It looks like 2,000 people were given this poll for a research study. That's a huge survey. So you can get a lot of data from students. Now, I'm thinking, you know, ages, what, 18 to 25 generally? All righty. So according to the recent poll, most of the men, and I'll tell you what percent in a moment, out of the 2,000 polled, like I said, at Oakland University, guess what they consider more important than anything when looking for a mate? Guess. You got it. Looks. 54% of the men said, oh, wait a minute. What am I saying? What? My eyes are googly this morning. Holy moly. 83% of the men said that looks were the most important thing when looking for a mate. 83%? What? Okay, get my eyes back in gear here. 54% of the women in the 2000 poll listed it as important. A little over half of the women, 83% of the men said, you gotta be looking good. You see, that's why we women are so obsessed with being skinny and having to look perfect. Because we have to look perfect. We have to look great. Well, that kind of sucks. Anyway, have a little note from some of the people who were polled and the quotes that were listed. It says an 18-year-old business management major, who's a guy, I won't say his name, was willing to come forward and say, yes, he was one of the 83% of guys who said looks were the most important. My women have to look sexy and make me feel good about myself. And also they have to feel good about themselves. They have to make you feel good about yourself? Okay, whatever. So what you're saying is you got trophy women. So if you're seen with women who are looking good, it makes you feel good about yourself. Look at this woman I can attract and hook up with. Woo! I must be pretty great guy because she's hot. Okay. That's called immaturity. All right, here we go. So what do you find that is most important in attracting someone in a relationship? Of all the students polled, like I said, 83 men said looks, 54% said looks of women. Here we go. 41% of the whole group listed personality. That was men and women. I don't know. 41% of men and women said personality was really important. That's kind of refreshing. 32% said a sense of humor. 25% of those polled listed intelligence. 15% listed beliefs. And 15% listed goal-oriented as essential things that they look for in a mate. Okay, so here's the list. Number one, the most important thing was looks. Number two was personality. Number three was sense of humor. Number four was intelligence. Oh, God. I want somebody who looks really hot and they don't have to know crap. They just have to look hot. And make me laugh. But I really don't need anyone who's intelligent. I'm not talking about scholar type intelligence. I'm just talking about general, someone who can carry on an intelligent conversation. That's what it said here in the poll. All right. Number three, number five on the list. Listed beliefs were most important in a partner. Beliefs. And that's, you know, that's really important if you can have the same religious beliefs, spiritual beliefs. And in number six place was goal-oriented. Someone who's goal-oriented. And the ones who answered that as most important are, of course, the nerds at the university. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Oh, by the way, one of the women who said that it was really important to have someone with a sense of humor, and she was quoted as saying, now this is very mature, I want to have a guy who's funny because I don't want to be bored. I don't want to be bored. Oh, God. In terms of intelligence, one of the people who were polled, who was a guy, he was 21. He says, I'm not good at dealing with relationships and money, but it's really important for me to have someone who's really intelligent. Mm-hmm. All right. That's interesting. I like that. Okay. Just some ideas about what 2,000 people at a university feel are important things to them when finding a relationship. But you knew that looks was going to be the number one with guys. You knew it, didn't you? Isn't that amazing, though, that women are only like 53% of them say looks is number one, but 83% of the guys. Wow! Okay, let's go on to some of the other online questions here. Oh, I like this one. All right. Dear Dr. Michelle, I was seeing a guy for a while. Right from the start, it was obvious he was addicted to the attention he would get from girls on his... Girls, in parentheses. It's a felony! She's 12! On his MySpace page. They would send him sleazy comments, etc. I got to the point where I asked him to make a choice, me or his MySpace and his online relationships. He chose me. He professed his love for me. He wanted a future. He said, I want to be with you. And in her words, blah, blah, blah. Over time, I realized he did not get rid of his habit. He just changed his screen name. All right. Now, this is a guy, who's 36 years old and still craves attention from these MySpace chicks. I realized I could never shower him with the attention he craved and let the MySpace thing go for a while. Until I noticed he would keep his cell phone on silent, but look at it often, I got hold of his cell one night, and sure enough, sleazy, disgusting texts from one of the women were coming over. I immediately packed up his clothes and kicked him out of my house at 3 a.m. You go, girl! You get those suitcases out there! It had been over in my mind for a long time, but this was what I needed to see to kick him out of my life for good. Do you think I did the right thing, Dr. Michelle? Yeah. There's my answer. Next question. No. By the way, in parentheses, she says, I think I did the right thing because any guy who needs attention from the likes of MySpace chicks, girls, needs to be kicked to the curb ASAP. Oh, yeah. You did the right thing. You see, there's something wrong with somebody who has to go in their head to create meaningful relationships from words on the internet instead of having face-to-face communication with someone in real life. You got a problem there. That means somebody's fearful and has to pretend who they are to present well to other people in the world. And that's really a genuine and something warm and wonderful in someone you want. Not. So good for you. 36 years old, still doing that stuff, too. Phew. Good luck, guy. Okay. If you have to pretend who you are to other people, that's fine. It's your choice. But I'm glad that you did that because, yeah. Go the other way. 180. Pull a 180. Kick him out. Make him go away. Or whatever. Or you go the other way. If he's not moving and it's his place and he's paying the rent, you leave. Okay. On the other hand, dear Dr. Michelle, my wife is addicted to her MySpace. She spends hours and hours a day on the computer. Does she have a job? Does she do anything? Oh, maybe she's at work sneaking it. A lot of people do that. They're sitting in their desk and they're sneaking the MySpace thing. Okay. She spends hours and hours a day on the computer and deletes the history. Oh, every time she gets off. Now, there's a clue. Yeah. She says it's just innocent talk with friends. But I have felt humiliation and a feeling of betrayal ever since she got the computer over a year ago. I feel I lost her and will never get her back again. Uh-oh. We have a child together and I wish we could have the love we shared before she went online. That dreaded online, that dreaded computer. All those relationships out there just waiting to be intimate and close with. All the love we have now seems fake. Now you have to like make sure that she is on MySpace and that she is communicating with people. And you have to really prove that this is really what's going on. Because you said she spends hours and hours a day on the computer and deletes the history. That's kind of suspicious. But maybe she has OCD. Some people delete history because they feel good doing that. It cleans up the clutter in their mind. But anyway, so if she is spending hours talking to other folks and creating a relationship, again, online with people who she can't really face-to-face talk to and feel and have normal relationships, then, you know, I'd really go to a therapist with her because you guys have a kid. You have a child together. You need to focus on taking care of the child and working through this. And sitting down again, and I see you are in another state, and this is from Jared. I see you could probably get another really good point of view and help from a couples therapist as well, because you do have a kid. If you didn't have any children together and she's, you know, addicted to this MySpace thing, just like I told the last listener, then, you know, and you want to stay together, indeed go to couples therapy. But since you have a child, definitely do it. We've got to find out what is making this woman defocus on your relationship. Why does she have to go outside and not pay any attention to your relationship? That's really an important thing to do. You know what I'm saying? So try to do that, because that would be really important. Call your general practitioner. They can always refer you to local psychologists or couples therapists who might be able to help you, okay? I know that may sound like a cop-out when I tell you to do that, but I really think it's important, because there are people out there who are really good and can help you clarify things that are really going on that you may not see. Will help you communicate better. You know what I'm saying? Okay. Let's move on to this test that I wanted to give you. I have several personality tests that I've given online, and you get to take with me live and just think about some of the answers, and then what I can do is tell you what they indicate. Now, some of these tests are not empirical necessarily, but they do give you things to think about. So this is the Forest test. I don't know if you've ever heard of this one or not, but it's imagining things, and then I will give you questions. I will give you some of the answers, and then I will tell you what your thinking may be saying to you about yourself. So this is learn something more about yourself and also your friends and family's personality test. Ready? Imagine you're in a forest. Try to think of the first answer that comes into your mind as well, okay? Imagine yourself in a forest. Is the forest you see light or dark? Okay. I see myself in a forest in daylight. I see myself in a forest at night. I see myself in a forest at dusk or dawn. So is the forest you see light or dark? Sort of think about the forest. What kind of light? What time of day are you seeing yourself in? Okay. And according to this personality test, the forest is your life and how you see it. If you selected a forest in daylight, this would strongly suggest you're generally pretty happy. The more light you see in the forest, the more content you're likely to be with your life. If you selected a forest at night, it suggests that there may be some major things in your life that you'd like to change or are dissatisfied with, and that you're likely to be under stress for some reason. If you selected a forest at dusk or dawn, this might suggest something in between, like there are one or two things in your life that you might want to change. So just kind of think about that. There you go. Light, dark, daylight, dusk, dawn. Did you see a path in the forest, by the way? So you're in that forest, and whatever time of day it is and whatever light you're seeing, did you see a path? If you did see a path, yes, you may not be settled into your life as it is. Younger folks usually see a path. Why is this? Why is this? Well, the path is symbolic of where you're going. People still finding their way in life are more likely to see a path. Those more settled in their direction or place in life are less likely to see a path. You see what I'm saying? And those people who see a bunch of trees and they have a lot of choices and they don't know where they're going, they're really messed up. How's that? Isn't that nice of me? I just made that up. That's cruel and nasty. No, but I'm just kidding. I really am. All right, you continue on your walk through the forest. Here we go. You're walking. And you see water. How lovely. Think about that. You're walking through the forest, whatever time of day. Okay. And what does it look like? A puddle? A pond? A stream? A river? A lake? Or an ocean? What do you see? Puddle, pond, stream, river, lake, ocean. Or somewhere in between. I think I've given you all the general choices of the water you see in front of you in the forest. The water, supposedly according to this personality test, is symbolic of sex. The depth and speed of the water you see is indicative of your attitude, appetite, and approach to sex. The speed at which you see the water moving is an indicator of your appetite for sex. So we're going to move on to that. Is the water you see moving fast, slow, still, and my favorite, stagnant? Oh. The speed at which you see the water moving is an indicator of your appetite for sex, not necessarily your need. You see? The slower the water, the lower your appetite. The faster the water, the greater your appetite. Okay. How deep is this water? Is it shallow? Can you stand up in it? You can't stand up in it. You're like kind of flailing there. Or it's extremely deep. Okay. The depth of the water is an indicator of how you see and what you want from sex, according to this personalities.com test. If you saw shallow water, then you're able to reach fulfillment from deep and intense lovemaking. If you saw fast-moving water, little and often is for you. Little and often is for you. If you saw deep waters, then your love for the deep and intense doesn't mean you cannot enjoy anything else. You get true fulfillment from deeper and more intense lovemaking for you. Like the old saying, still waters run deep. Okay, here we go. Next question. And where am I? You need to cross the water. How do you do it? How do you cross this water? I step over it. I wade through it or I swim through it. I walk around it. I use a bridge. I use a boat or a ship. That's how I cross the water here. All right. The ease with which you cross the water is an indicator of your attitude and approach to sex. The more easily you cross the water, the more comfortable or liberal you're likely to be, they say here in the personality test, in your approach to sex. I like it. Alrighty. We're moving on with our test here, and this is called You Continue Walking. You've walked through your forest. You've seen the water. How big is it? How have you crossed it? Now you continue walking and you reach a beach. You reach a beach. How many people do you see? Do you see hundreds? Hundreds! 20 to 75. Do you see one or two? Or is the beach desolate? Do you see no one on the beach? Well, the beach supposedly is symbolic of how you relate to people around you. How many people you pictured on the beach relates directly to the number of people you want around you. So, according to this test, a truly socially gregarious person is most comfortable in the company of a large number of people, and they seek the audience. You know, this personality type seeks a beach packed with people. Now, at the end of the scale, opposite end of the scale, the folks who see a deserted beach are happy with their own company. They're very happy to spend long periods on their own where others would feel lonely. You see what I'm saying? Matter of choice here. Now, if you saw hundreds of people, you are quite a social animal. A person that's very comfortable in a crowded pub, club, or bar is probably the kind of guy or gal you are. You may even seek people out. You like an audience. If you saw one or two people, then you're a person who wouldn't want to spend a whole lot of time in crowded pubs or bars or clubs. You can be social, but you're often content with your own company. That's the vast majority of folks there, by the way. They see one or two people on it. They're cool about going out, but they're pretty okay with being with themselves as well. Okay? Now, if you didn't see any people at all on the beach, if you saw a deserted beach, then you're a person least comfortable in a crowded group. Okay? You may even avoid folks. You have the potential possibly to be social, but you wouldn't get lonely stranded on a desert island. You're content for long periods of time with your own company. And to a lot of these folks, I say, well, you got to kind of look at your social isolation, because that's not a good thing either. That's not really a good thing at all. So you got to kind of look at, and you know, none of the answers here on the beach thing here are pretty, they're all pretty positive. Just kind of gives you a way of thinking, you know, about how you look at the beach and how you look at people in your life and how you like to socialize and things like that. All righty. Let's see if we have any more questions here. Oh, yeah. The last question about the beach. How far are the nearest people to you who you see on the beach? Are they close enough to talk to? Are they not close enough to talk to? Are they quite a ways away? You see that group or a few people quite a ways away. Not too far. Or are they way in the distance? Okay? Are they way in the distance? Well, where you see people on the beach is symbolic of how you relate to folks around you. If you see people close enough to talk to, then this suggests you want contact with other folks most of the time. You're a little more comfortable with people. If you saw people that weren't close enough to talk to, then this suggests you don't need contact with other people as much all the time. You like to know that someone's there for you. And according to this personalitytest.com, answer for the last. If you saw people in the distance, then you don't need contact with other people all the time. You're pretty okay with your own company, which is okay too. You like who you are, or you are a bit socially isolated, and that's not good. Maybe you need to get out and about, because being social is what it's all about, how we relate to other people. And that's how we learn about ourselves too, and all that good stuff. Okay? So, just some ideas for you. I like that. All right. By the way, if you'd like to get in touch with me, you can find me at docmichelle@AOL.com. That's my email. From that email address, I've answered most of the questions here today on my show. So write me if you have any questions. Also, if you'd like to find me on my website, you can do so. It's docmichelletherapy.com. Doc Michelle Therapy. DrMichelleTherapy.com. That's T-H-E-R-A-P-Y, by the way. I know, I had a hard time spelling that when I started out, too. All right. Thank you so much for writing me today, for checking it out. It's nice to be here with you. We're still on the couch here with Dr. Michelle. You can stay if you'd like. TJ McCormick is up next, though, with his fabulous self and his interesting stuff as usual. Have a great day, and I will talk to you next time here. This is Dr. Michelle, your friendly psychologist, saying do take care. Okay, bye-bye.